From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, the narrative of Grammy's So Male was turned on its head last night, with women commanding the stage and taking home many top awards. Then Glenn Close has scored a 7th Academy Award nomination, this time for playing the long-suffering spouse of a famous novelist in The Wife. Close tells us how she sees roles changing for older women in Hollywood.
I think it's spectacular that women of my age are still having viable, exciting careers, because the irony is we only get better.
All that coming up on The Frame.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the soulfully authentic A Star Is Born, starring Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott in their Academy Award-nominated performances, for consideration in all categories.
And by Marvel Studios' Black Panther, now nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including Costume and Production Design, Score, Original Song, All the Stars, performed by Kendrick Lamar and SZA, and Best Motion Picture.
Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. If you watched the Grammy Awards last night and you care about representation and diversity, you may have been pleasantly surprised. The 61st annual Grammy Awards did not repeat the Grammy So Male ceremony of 2018, where only one woman, Alicia Cara, won a solo award in the top categories. Alicia Keys hosted, Cardi B became the first solo woman to win for Rap Album, and Kacey Musgraves took home the trophy for Album of the Year. On top of all that, the show's musical performances were heavily female-driven, with numbers by Dua Lipa, Dolly Parton, Camila Cabello, Lady Gaga, and many more. I spoke today with Variety's executive music editor, Shirley Halperin, and she began with her reaction to the show's performances.
I thought the performances were really top-notch. I thought they were very well produced. They were colorful. They were elaborate. There was a lot of, really, beautiful choreography. There were a couple of moments that I think people were sort of scratching their heads, like the Jennifer Lopez, sort of presence in the Motown 60th anniversary tribute. She got a lot more singing time than Smokey Robinson, who was, one of the architects of the Motown sound. But I think Kacey Musgraves was fantastic. I think Cardi B was really fun. And, in terms of them stepping into that kind of embarrassing line last year about how women need to step up, I think the producers and CBS really took to heart the controversy and really looked at their program and thought about these issues.
I want to play something from Dua Lipa, who won Best New Artist. She was making a reference to comments made last year by Academy President Neil Portnow.
I guess, oh my God, I don't even know where to begin. I guess where I want to begin is by saying how honored I am to be nominated alongside so many incredible female artists this year, because I guess this year we've really stepped up.
So that is mirroring what Neil Portnow said about women stepping up. So there are two things that are at issue here. One is who is allowed and invited to perform in the show, and the second is who actually goes home with the hardware. So if you were to look at who actually was nominated and who won Grammys, does it feel like some progress is being made on that front, even if the performers were actually more representative of the industry?
Yeah, but I can't really give credit to the Grammys organization for that, because it's the voting body, and the voting body is working musicians and engineers and mixers, producers, songwriters, so it's really what they feel are the songs and the albums that most resonated this year. I think Kacey Musgraves winning Album of the Year is a great example of how an artist can really transcend genres.
I love country music with everything that I am, and I'm very proud to be able to get to share my version of that with the world. Thank you for supporting that.
And just be embraced by, not just an American audience, but a global audience who, probably a lot of them wouldn't call themselves country music fans. So I think that was a big win. And I think Childish Gambino winning for This Is America, which is such a provocative, and politically charged song, was another example of the voting body really embracing something that is different, that is not pop-oriented, that wasn't, you know, like a major radio hit. You know, all of these things come into play. And I think things are changing. You know, look, it's an evolution. It's sort of like steering a battleship. It doesn't happen overnight. But I see signs of a broader, more inclusive Grammy organization in the future.
When you think about kind of how wide a net the Grammys and the Grammy voters are casting, you look at Kacey Musgraves, even though the K-pop band BTS did not win, they were certainly a big presence. Does it feel like the definition of what is Grammy worthy is becoming a little bit more broad now?
Well, I think there's always been this conflict between Grammys as a TV show and Grammys as, you know, a music award ceremony. And you really have to balance those two things. And I think for CBS, you know, which airs the show, their priority is really just making sure that people tune in and that they get the youngest, you know, demo possible. You know, Camila Cabello is obviously very much of that generation. And BTS, which has, you know, very, very energetic fan base, that's why they were chosen to present. I mean, they were only nominated for Best Recording Package. And they didn't win. So, you know, it's a bit of a stretch to have them there. But that's not to say that people weren't like excited just to see, you know, what is the biggest K-pop band in the world. So it's a mix of all those things. You know, I mean, I think it'll be more interesting to see how other award shows sort of pivot after the Grammys and the fact that they really took, you know, a much broader, more pop centric group of artists to perform.
When you think about the people who won, not only in the broadcast ceremony, but earlier, was there a specific award that really gratified you? And conversely, was there one person who didn't win who you really wish might have?
I think the gratifying win was St. Vincent, winning with Jack Antonoff, just two incredible artists. You know, I was really thrilled that Dua Lipa won for Best New Artist and for Electricity, which is just an amazing, amazing song, really one of the greatest songs of the last year. In terms of surprises, I mean, I was a little surprised that some of the artists coming in with so many nominations, like Drake, really didn't walk away with a whole hell of a lot. But I will give a shout out to one amazing female mastering engineer, which is Emily Lazar. She won for mastering for Beck's album. And she has been at this for like, you know, 20 years, really at the top of her game. And she's the first woman, you know, mastering engineer to win a Grammy of the stature. So really, really thrilled about that, too.
No, when it comes to representation, women come up very short as producers and as engineers. So that was a very special win. Shirley Halperin is the executive music editor at Variety. Shirley, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you, as always.
Falling into you.
Coming up on The Frame, Glenn Close is one perseverant actress. The Wife took 14 years to make, and it's paid off for her with an Oscar nomination.
Ooh, baby, giving up my ghost for you. Now I'm see-through. You give me a feeling.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Warner Brothers Pictures, presenting the soulfully authentic A Star is Born, starring Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, and Sam Elliott in their Academy Award-nominated performances. Now nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Adapted Screenplay. Kenneth Turan of the Los Angeles Times calls it passionate, emotional, and fearless. And AFI calls the film a stellar achievement in its own universe, for consideration in all categories.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Marvel Studios, presenting Black Panther. The LA Times raves Black Panther is the cinematic event of the year. Vanity Fair calls it a political and social triumph. USA Today acclaims Black Panther is a rousing cultural movement. And now nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including costume and production design, score, original song All the Stars, performed by Kendrick Lamar and SZA, and Best Motion Picture.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. Glenn Close has been in two films in the past decade that each have taken 14 years to make. The first was the 2011 film Albert Nobbs, which Close also co-wrote and produced. More recently, The Epic Wait was for the 2018 movie The Wife, which was directed by Bjorn Runge. Close was nominated for an Oscar for both films. Close earlier won a Golden Globe trophy for her role in The Wife. In the film, her character is married to a celebrated novelist played by Jonathan Pryce, and she might have a lot more to do with his success than anyone, including her husband, has acknowledged. When Close accepted her Globe, she explained why the film was so personal for her.
I'm thinking of my mom, who really sublimated herself to my father her whole life. And in her 80s, she said to me, I feel I haven't accomplished anything. And it was so not right.
When I spoke with Close recently, we talked about family and what it's like to stick with a film that you really believe in, like Albert Nobbs or The Wife, when it's not clear that it will ever get made.
The thing that used to drive me nuts, and still does, is though you have a proven record of good choices and a talent that people have invested in, there's so few people who won't just risk on talent and passion and story. And that's, you know, that's what an independent movie is. You have to have this insane feeling that it's important to make and you're not going to give up. But I remember going to some office and they say, well, we don't share your passion. And I say, I don't need your passion. I have enough passion for this whole room full. I just need your money. Share your money. I've got the passion.
In watching The Wife, it feels as if it is the kind of movie where the actors get to act. It almost feels, for the best possible comparison, like theater, that you are acting opposite other great actors. You're not dealing with special effects. I mean, obviously, you're on location, but it does feel like a very old-fashioned movie in that it's so concerned with character and dialogue, and that seems to be such a dying art these days.
In Hollywood, in the studios, I think it can be considered a dying art, but I think there's a very rigorous, and always will be, a very, very muscly, independent film, independent voice movement, and it always, my definition of an independent film, which is the kind of film you're talking about, is a film that almost doesn't get made, because that's just the nature of it, that doesn't fit any formula, that might have a cast that they can't go to the bank with, you know, say we're, you know, like a tentpole film. But it is the kind of movie that used to come out of Hollywood. But I think we're at a time when people need the kind of comfort and deep reflection and humanity that these kinds of movies can afford.
Your film, The Wife, is based on a novel by Meg Wolitzer. It's adapted by Jane Anderson. When did you first become aware of the material? Was it as a book, as a screenplay?
As a screenplay. And I waited to read the book because I heard that the book was different, that the approach is different.
And what spoke to you? Why did you feel a connection to this character and this story?
I'd never played a character like Joan Castleman before. There are a lot of elements to her character, her shyness, her inner life that I really could relate to, though I had to really figure out her whole story and her psychology, really, before I felt comfortable in stepping into her shoes. But I think even with those questions unanswered, you know, when I put my name on the film, I thought it was really intriguing and, again, would represent for me territory, psychological and emotional, that I'd never explored before.
What were those things? What were those things that you felt compelled to explore and to try to sort out?
My one big question going in was, why didn't she leave him? Because I was afraid that every woman in the audience would jump up in disgust and say, oh, God, why doesn't she just leave him? He's a narcissistic asshole. So I had to answer that question. If I couldn't answer that question, I couldn't have played that part.
I think there's a clue, and the clue comes from a New Yorker review of the book. And I'm going to quote from it because I think it's a great insight. It's talking about the couple that you and Jonathan Pryce play. Although they have three variously unhappy children, he has always been the real child in the family.
I totally agree. You know, what's so valuable about the flashbacks in the film is that you see them slip into this complicit relationship where she is desperately in love with him. She's wildly gifted as a writer. They've just basically burnt all their bridges by their love affair. And, you know, the simple question, I can fix it. Do you want me to fix it? But before she says that, he says, "How can you love me if I'm just a hack?" And that, to me, really defines him and the beginning of his narcissism, in that I don't think he ever believes he's worth loving. The last question he asks her is, "Do you love me?"
Hmm? Do you love me?
Yes, I love you, Joe. I love you very much.
Oh, God. You're such a good liar. How will I ever know?
Because he thinks he can only be loved because he has some sort of value, and she thinks he is valued because he is loved.
Yeah, I think he needs to have validation from the world that he's worth it. He's worth loving. And I in many ways I think about my dad. My dad was sent away to an English boarding school and he was 7 years old, and I don't think he ever recovered from it. I think there was a kind of abandonment that he had to deal with. I don't know if he ever articulated it to himself, because he didn't. I know he was a deep guy, but he had no emotional vocabulary. So sadly, I never got to really dig in to what that really did to him. But we saw somebody who always had to be the center of the universe, and I think who was always going out to do things that were. You know, very, very impressive. And I always thought it's because he had basically been abandoned or made to feel that he wasn't worth loving. And so when Joe asked Joan, as he's dying, "Do you love me?" That was a really hard thing for me to film. You know, in the moment, I didn't know what to say. And I think that's what she would have felt. I remember stopping and turning to Bjorn and say, "Does he have to say that? I mean, it's so unfair." And yet for him, that was the core issue. Do you love me? Am I worthy? Am I yet worthy of your love? I don't know. And then he says, "I don't know. You know, you're such a good liar. How can I ever believe you?" Oh, my God. I think he was talking to himself.
We're talking with Glenn Close about her movie, The Wife. There's also a big part of this story about what a woman's role is in the world. And your character is a very good writer, and she recognizes that the world is probably not going to accept her as a writer, and that she is going to have to sublimate her career aspirations for what is prescribed for her, and that is to be a wife and a mother. And it's heartbreaking. Yeah. And I couldn't help but think about my own mom. I'm one of four boys. And when she was in her 40s, she stopped raising the kids and went to law school and had her own career because she realized that she wanted to be fulfilled in a way beyond parenting. I wonder if part of that story connected to you on some other level, because I think you've referenced what your own mother meant to you in terms of this story.
Absolutely. I mean, I wish my mom in her 40s had had confidence to do that. She tried, I think, in her 60s to move away and find her own thing, but ended up coming back. And I think what I've learned from this whole experience is that being a nurturer, which is a natural thing for a woman, being a mother and being a wife is very, very important, but it's different. It's separate from, for example, what your mother found, which is hopefully personal fulfillment, not through someone else, but through her own endeavors.
Right.
It's not that you negate the people you love. It's just that you, I think, add to their life by fulfilling yourself.
There is a young actress who plays a younger version of yourself. She seems to have an uncanny ability to channel the interior Glenn Close. Could you tell us who she is and why she has that uncanny ability?
She's my wonderful daughter, Annie Stark, who has a beautiful old soul.
When you have conversations with Annie about acting and about the world, because the world has changed a little bit, but not completely, for people who want to act, who are women, what do you tell her, and how do you hope the world that she is welcomed into might be different from the world that you grew up in?
Well, that's a huge question, because the world has changed so profoundly. And I think I've seen my daughter weep because she's not sure she wants to bring a child into the world as it is now. She gets kind of grief-stricken about what's about our country, you know, I mean, it's so, and I also think my daughter is a gifted actress, and I think that the more she does what I have been able to do, the more she will be able to meet the world, however it is.
Coming up, more of my conversation with Glenn Close. She's nominated for an Academy Award for The Wife.
When an earthquake hits, you need to drop, cover, and hold on.
Definitely there will be the perception that the ground is literally waving in front of you.
But what do you do after the shaking stops? When the power is out, the roads are blocked. I'm Jacob Margolis, host of KPCC's new podcast, The Big One, your survival guide. I've got plenty of answers for you. Listen in Apple Podcasts.
KPCC podcasts are supported by Fox Searchlight Pictures, presenting The Favorite, now nominated for 10 Academy Awards, including Best Director Yorgos Lanthimos, Best Actress Olivia Colman, Best Supporting Actresses Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, Best Original Screenplay, Best Costume Design, Best Film Editing, Best Production Design, Best Cinematography, and Best Picture of the Year. For your consideration.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Let's get back to my conversation now with Glenn Close. She is nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress for her role in The Wife. It's her 7th Oscar nomination, and she already won the Screen Actors Guild Award for her performance in the film. I asked her what it's been like to work on a movie like The Wife that took more than a decade and required so much determination to make, then to see it finally come out and get such a warm reception from audiences and critics.
It's just, it's hit some sort of place in people's hearts, you know, it has great resonance. And that's nothing you could really plan. We shot it in the fall of 2016, and we premiered it at Toronto in 2017. And I remember sitting in that audience. I just thought, you know, I've made another little independent film, and it was a great experience, and I adored the director. And then I sat there and listened to the audience in that packed house respond to every nuance of that film. And I was shocked. And I still can feel my sense of astonishment that this story, which seems so specific, about this very complex relationship, had such profound resonance with the audience. And, you know, it ended up getting sold to every country in the world. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. And then between the time it was premiered and the time it was actually released, the Me Too movement started. So I think it's these amazing events that have happened that have been very serendipitous for the film itself.
The LA Times columnist Mary McNamara just wrote a piece, mentioned you specifically, as well as other actresses like Betty Buckley, Candace Bergen, and Helen Mirren, and was making the argument that it feels as if, even on a fractional level, women are starting to be allowed some of the career longevity that have always been given to men. And I'm going to quote something that she wrote. "The notion that women naturally aged out of starring roles at 40 didn't just limit careers and storylines, it reinforced the steel cage for women in general. Hollywood has spent years telling us that women are interesting only when they're young enough to fall in love, have sexy, cool friends, and or children. When the kids are old enough to talk or sing, motherhood usually becomes a supporting role. As for the years after, well, postmenopausal women, with a few notable Golden Girls exceptions, were just old and uninteresting."
I agree with that. I think it's been you're the aunt or the mother or the grandmother, and you're definitely in a secondary role. And I think it's spectacular that women of my age are still having viable, exciting careers, because the irony is we only get better. You know, I mean, that I keep looking at my watch seeing how much time do I have left. Oh, my gosh.
Do you really feel that you're a better actor now than you might have been 10 or 20 years ago?
Oh, definitely. I think if you're not better than you were 20 years ago, you're doing something wrong, because the whole trajectory of being an actor is the craft of exploring another human being. And in that exploration, you become a better person. I think you become more tolerant. You become more empathetic. And I think you widen your palette as far as, you know, we should be able to get into anyone's shoes. And to, you know, for me, that's a certain exercise of my imagination. But it's also coming from a point of feeling non-judgmental and curious about why people behave the way they do.
I want to ask you one last question. The character played by Jonathan Pryce, Joe, is accepting a literary award in the film. And Joan, your character, asks him not to thank her in his speech.
I don't want to be thought of as the long-suffering wife. You understand that, don't you?
No. I have to thank you. Everyone thanks their wife. If I don't, I'll come off like some narcissistic bastard.
But you are.
God. No, it'll be quick, Joni. You know, one sentence, it'll be painless. Come on.
No.
She says, I don't want to be thought of as the long-suffering wife. And it occurred to me you could hear the same thing at any number of Hollywood award shows, sometimes in those exact words. And I'm wondering what aspect of that story meant something different to you, to hear these guys get up there and say the same thing and maybe really undersell and undervalue the people who are not on stage with them, and that is their partners.
I can't really judge that. I know what it's meant to me. I mean, I've was a single mother, you know, and I know what it was like to maintain a family. I know what it was like to be able to be home. I remember my daughter when she was 3 coming up to me and saying, I want you, I want all of you, and knowing that I couldn't at times give her all of me because I was working. So the fact that they actually do mention their family always means a lot to me, and whether, you know, how their relationship with their wife or how that's in their specific case, I don't know. But I do think, and I've gotten great strength from my family. They bring me down to earth. They're where I go to make sure that my priorities are still straight. And so I can't really speak to that, but I know what that's meant in my life.
Glenn Close, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
That was Glenn Close, the star of the film The Wife, and that's our show for today. Remember, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find us at The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Podcasting is supported by Fox Searchlight, presenting The Favorite. Now nominated for 10 Academy Awards, including director Yorgos Lanthimos, actress Olivia Colman, supporting actresses Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, original screenplay, and best picture of the year. Now playing.